Good afternoon. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Well, is the course becoming more interesting or more troublesome? In the recent weeks, you've all been put more and more on the spot in terms of involvement with the ideas, the implementing of the ideas rather than the contemplation of the ideas in the course, which has brought you to the threshold of having to make changes. That's what makes it troublesome. It's also what makes it interesting. Because the moment you are willing to make changes or abandon old habits, things that had been available to you before, but which you did not recognize because of the habits you were employing, will begin to register with you. I mean, they will begin to register with you as opportunities. I'm speaking of it in a very positive sense. It's not that you will all of a sudden see how horrible everything is. One of the key things that we've been discussing recently is the importance of your attention. You might think that it's necessary for you to begin to pay attention to what you're giving your attention to. But we have to back up a little bit from that. And the question has to be, how are you using your attention? Not what is your attention being placed on, but how are you using your attention? Why do you give your attention here and not there? Then we have to back up even further to a more primary place. The question is, are you using your attention all by yourself? Or are you using your attention in partnership with the Father? Are you using your attention as an independent entity? Or, in the process of giving your attention to whatever there is to give your attention to, are you conscious of doing it in tandem with your guide, me, or the Father? In which there's no sense of doing it alone, in which, at the least, there is the constant awareness that there is someone standing with you whose perspective is not governed by all the definitions you've given to everything, all the agreements you've made with everyone else, and whose perspective always has as its focus the recognition of and the glorification of God in whatever you're giving your attention to. So, if you're going through your day, and obviously you are going to be giving your attention to something because that is the state of being conscious. If you are going through your day without ever having a sense of being companioned with, then you can count on it. You are going through your day in your typical ego mindset of being a separated, independent, autonomous, self-regulating entity. That's called the human condition. That's called the ego frame of reference. It's you, unconscious of reality, in the middle of a dream that you've dreamed up. And that is exactly what everyone will wake up out of. So don't value it. It's really important to understand that it's this state of autonomy which constitutes your incapacity to recognize God. It therefore is what constitutes your prison. It's what keeps you in a state of ignorance, ignorant of the truth that would set you free, ignorant of a conscious experience of being that it's your birthright to be having forever. So it isn't what are you giving your attention to, it's how are you using your attention, and even before that, are you giving your attention to everything in tandem with, in cooperation with, in brotherhood with one who is awake? Your guide, the Holy Spirit, me, the Father. I promise you that if during the past 2 weeks when I said you would have occasion to teach peace in order to learn it, that those occasions arose because you chose not to be joined with one who was awake while observing your world. You chose to look at it privately. When you look privately, all of God, that is the only thing there is for you to see, does not look like God. It looks like the fear through which you're looking at everything. A fear that you cannot avoid when you are pretending to be independent and on your own. And you know what? You will see justification for your fear. And you will frighten yourself. And you will make yourself ill. Why? Because you're looking alone through the lens of fear, sending out messengers of fear that will return to you proclaiming the abundance of things to be frightened about. And if you're not careful, you will become preoccupied with the bad news. And in a greater state of fear, you will give even more attention to what you're looking at, with even more fear, until, if it's not squelched, you become obsessed with the awfulness of human will. Then, in the horror of that awful experience that you're having, you will find yourself faced with only one thing to do, which by now has become the hardest thing to do, and that is to find your peace. Of course, now you're severely upset, and maybe your body is even giving you strong signals of pain or illness. And you say, how am I supposed to find my peace in the middle of this? But you find that you have to find a way, because it hurts too much not to. And so now, finally, you do what you should have done in the beginning. You choose to withdraw your attention from the awfulness of human will and come back within. You soak in a hot tub, or you meditate. You find some way to become still within yourself and turn to the altar. Turn to the voice for truth. Turn to the Holy Spirit, which is nothing more than your right mind. And it's hard. But if you do it with singleness of purpose, it can happen almost instantaneously. The more undivided your intent, the more rapidly the awfulness of human will fade from your frayed nerve endings, if you will, and you will find peace returning. You will find inner stability returning, and you will find a capacity to look at your world not alone this time, and find that there's another way to look at it. Now, it might mean that you will still see a call for correction in your world. The evidence of the awfulness of human will still be there, calling for you to become clear about the truth of what has to be there underneath the awfulness of human will that's being expressed, the Christ that is there underneath the behavior that looks unchristlike, the intent of which is unchristlike. And so the call for correction will still be there, but you will be free to deal with it with peace, so that your response teaches peace and you learn it. You know, all of this, all this, the teaching in the Course, the movement along what you might call your spiritual path, all of it has to do with real fundamental change. Where? In you. So that you begin teaching something new and being an agent for change in the world. But you know what? The, quote, being an agent for change in the world, unquote, is something that happens spontaneously. It's not something you do. You attend to what? Where you're giving your attention. Why you're giving it there. And whether you're giving it all by yourself or in community with God, the Holy Spirit, me, or your guide. Not alone, in other words. And what may not be sinking in yet is that this makes all the difference in the world to your experience of the world and of who you are. It really makes a difference. It really is transformational. And it really is essential. Don't wait until you're in excruciating pain before you're willing to acknowledge that it's essential. You can bring the same amount of devotion and commitment to what is essential when nothing excruciating is happening. But the tendency is to
play with your spirituality. Oh, life is so sweet. Oh, God is so wonderful. Oh, I know, underneath, around, above, the everlasting arms of love are holding me.
Oh, yeah. But what is this me that the underlying arms of love is holding? Is it
someone who is sweetly being independent and having all these spiritual thoughts? Oh, I don't need to worry about just having fantasies of spirituality, because I know God is holding me.
Well, hell, God's been holding you since the moment of creation. And it hasn't done you a bit of good if you haven't been willing to say, "Oh,
hi, Father.
Not only do I know that you're holding me, but I'm choosing to actually be aware of you as you're holding me here in your arms. I'm willing to actually acknowledge you and the fact that I have a relationship with you. I am consciously being with you." Like a nursing child, I look into your eyes and I connect with you. I acknowledge being with you. And because I am, I can see and feel the fact that you are connected with me. And I choose to stay in this consciousness of being while I participate in everything that you are unfolding, all of creation. You see what I'm saying? It takes practice. It takes persistence. You have an age-old habit of looking at everything all by yourself. It's second nature to you. Second nature? What's first nature? Second nature is a substitute. Your rule needs to be no substitutes allowed. No substitutions, please. I want the original, real experience. Well, you're not going to have the original experience until you choose well. As to how you're going to use your attention. And you know what? The wonderful thing is that nobody can see where you're giving your attention. Nobody can tell you're doing anything different than you did before. It's not something that sticks out like a sore thumb. So you can't claim that people will think you're weird if you give your attention here or there. If you give your attention to the Holy Spirit first and then look with the Holy Spirit at what's happening in your experience so that you may be in that experience out from the clarity that comes from the joining. You don't have to, you can't say, I don't have time. Because you can do this in every moment, in every situation. Every encounter with your brother or sister is an occasion for not doing it as a private, independent entity. Okay. I'm losing your attention. Because I'm repeating myself and you would like something new and stimulating, and you need to pay attention to how you're using your attention right now. Don't worry. I'm used to people tuning me out. And it's all right, because I know before long I'll have your attention again. And every time I have your attention, it offers another opportunity for helping secure you in the place where you feel the blessing of existing more consistently. I also know that there really isn't any other way you can do it at the moment. And so I'm not frustrated, because I'm not expecting you to do what you can't do. And I want you to give yourselves the same loving consideration. Okay, we'll go to the book. We ended up with the sentence, which is the Holy Spirit's second lesson. To have peace, teach peace, to learn it. This is still a preliminary step, since having and being are still not equated. It is, however, more advanced than the first step, which is really only a thought reversal. The second step is a positive affirmation of what you want. There's a little more involvement, in other words, on your part. This, then, is a step in the direction out of conflict. Since it means that alternatives have been considered and one has been chosen as more desirable. Again, a little more involvement on your part. A little bit more conscious intent on your part, a little more focus of your attention. And therefore, a little more clarity. Continuing, nevertheless, the evaluation, quote, more desirable, unquote, still implies that the desirable has degrees. Therefore, although this step is essential for the ultimate decision, it is clearly not the final one. It is clear at this point that the lack of order of difficulty in miracles has not yet been accepted, because nothing is difficult that is wholly desired. Again, something that is wholly desired is a desire that has nothing extraneous to it. It is purely itself, and is therefore what I've referred to as a singularity. Continuing, to desire wholly is to create, and creating cannot be difficult if God Himself created you as a creator. The second step, then, is still perceptual, although it is a giant step toward the unified perception which parallels God's knowing. As you take this step, which step? To have peace, teach peace, to learn it. So as you take this step and hold this direction, you will be pushing toward the center of your thought system, where the fundamental change will occur. You are only beginning this step now, but you have started on this way by realizing that only one way is possible. You do not yet realize this consistently, and so your progress is intermittent. But the second step is easier than the first because it follows. The very fact that you have accepted that is a demonstration of your growing awareness that the Holy Spirit will lead you on. In other words, not only are you not alone, but the one that is with you has an intent to lead you home, to not leave you abandoned, to not leave you with the feeling of nothing or no one significant being involved with you. It is the Holy Spirit's intent for you to experience being consciously loved for no good reason, without justification, just because. Section 3. Be vigilant only for God and His kingdom. Ooh, here we go again. More work. Less unconsciousness. Less drowsy, comfy sleep. Be vigilant only for God and His kingdom. For your own salvation, you must be critical. Since your salvation is critical to the whole sonship, wow, you make a difference. You thought this was all just about puny little you waking up. But puny little you waking up is the Christ that you are coming back into His or her full conscious capacity to reflect and glorify God. And that constitutes a decrease in what we could call the unconsciousness of the brotherhood of man, the sons and daughters of God as a whole. Because while you're insisting on dreaming your dreams and you are out of touch with the rest of the brotherhood, the rest of the brotherhood misses you. It experiences a lack. And it's the divine right, it's the birthright of all of the brotherhood to be experiencing itself in its totality. And so your waking up affects the whole, blesses the whole. It's not inconsequential. We said before that the Holy Spirit is evaluative and must be. His evaluation does not extend beyond you, or you would share it. In your mind, and your mind only, he sorts out the true from the false and teaches you to judge every thought that you allow to enter your mind in the light of what God put there. In other words, in light of what God already put there before you added your own cute little particular biased perspective. Continuing, whatever is in accord with this light, he, the Holy Spirit, retains to strengthen the kingdom in you. But what is partly in accord with truth, he accepts and purifies. But what is out of accord entirely, he rejects by judging against. In other words, the Holy Spirit says no to it. This is how he keeps the kingdom perfectly consistent and perfectly unified. In other words, as you return home, the Holy Spirit does not allow you to bring confusion and conflict with you. He helps you to see it so that you can release it, abandon it, neglect to reinforce it, so that your mind naturally comes into a state of alignment with the way the kingdom works. Continuing, what you must remember, however, is that what the Holy Spirit rejects, the ego accepts. Which means that at the initial stages, the Holy Spirit is going to be rejecting most of what you believe. But you know what? Here's the key. In the rejection of what you believe, he doesn't reject you. And holds you up in your own face, reflecting back to you that which has integrity, that which is love, that which is all of what God is expressing right where you are, that you had been ignoring because you gave preference to your fantastic, imaginative definition that you had created for yourself about yourself. Again, what you must remember, however, is that what the Holy Spirit rejects, the ego accepts. This is because they are in fundamental disagreement about everything. Being in fundamental disagreement about what? What you are. In other words, you're not the definition you've given yourself. Continuing, the ego's beliefs on this crucial issue vary, and that is why it promotes different moods. The Holy Spirit never varies on this point, and so the one mood he engenders is joy. He protects it by rejecting everything that does not foster joy, and so he alone can keep you wholly joyous. The Holy Spirit does not teach your mind to be critical of other minds because he does not want you to teach errors and learn them yourselves. Remember, what you teach, you learn. Continuing, he would hardly be consistent if he allowed you to strengthen what you must learn to avoid. In the mind of the thinker, then, he is judgmental, but only in order to unify the mind so it can perceive without judgment. This enables the mind to teach without judgment. And this is a key thing. You can recognize a call for love. You can recognize expressions of lovelessness without employing judgment. This is extremely important. They don't go hand in hand. You can recognize a brother's pain that is being occasioned by his unconsciousness of what he divinely is, what he truly is, without judgment, without saying, "Boy, you're ignorant. Boy, what a fool you are to believe that." You can't be my friend. You can look at it without reaction. And you can see it for what it is, a call for love, a call for correction, and be the presence of that which corrects, but without judgment. So the Holy Spirit will not teach you how to correct others by pointing out their faults, because that is what you will learn. But the Holy Spirit will tell you how to be with that brother in a manner that will provide the opportunity, the maximum opportunity, for the light to go on in that brother's mind. And in most instances, it's the last thing you, as a puny little mind, would think of. It's the last thing you would think would work. Again, this enables the mind to teach without judgment, and therefore to learn to be without judgment. The undoing is necessary only in your mind, so that you cannot project falsely. God Himself has established what you can project with perfect safety. Therefore, the Holy Spirit's third lesson is, be vigilant only for God and His kingdom. That's another way of saying, be vigilant for the voice for truth instead of the voice for fear. But you know what? Don't be vigilant for the voice for truth all by yourself. Join with the Holy Spirit. Be vigilant only for God and His kingdom with the help of the Holy Spirit. Remember, you want to stop doing stuff alone. Continuing, this is a major step toward fundamental change. Yet it is still a lesson in thought reversal, since it implies that there is something you must be vigilant against. It has advanced far from the first lesson, which was primarily a reversal, and also from the second, which was essentially the identification of what is more desirable. This step, which follows from the second, as the second follows from the first, emphasizes the dichotomy between the desirable and the undesirable. It therefore makes the ultimate choice inevitable. Somewhere along the line, if you're actually going to change, if you're actually going to wake up, the way you used to do things is going to have to become obviously less desirable than being awake. But that's not enough. It will finally have to come to the place where you find it to be totally undesirable, totally unacceptable. Then you will bring that singularity of intent to the issue. And you will have changed. Continuing, while the first step seems to increase conflict, and the second step still entails it to some extent, this one calls for consistent effort against it. In other words, you have to come to a place where conflict in any form is untenable to you. You know, most of you say, well, of course it's untenable to me. I don't like conflict. Watch what you give your attention to, though. When you turn on the TV, what do you go to watch? When you pick up the newspaper, what do you give your attention to? When you're at the checkout stand at the grocery store, does the inquirer get your attention? Does whose marriage is in trouble get your attention? Watch where you give your attention to, and you will realize that you tend to be dishonest with yourself all day long if you think that conflict is untenable to you. Why? Conflict is the spice of life. It keeps your day from being boring, doesn't it? Just be aware again, because this is important. While the first step seems to increase conflict, and the second step still entails it to some extent, this one calls for consistent effort against it. We said already that you can be as vigilant against God, I'm sorry, you can be as vigilant against the ego as for it. Okay. We said already that you can be as vigilant against the ego as for it. This lesson teaches not only that you can be, but that you must be. It does not concern itself with order of difficulty, but with clear-cut priority for vigilance. For not being sloppy in your mind, for not being lazy in your attentiveness, without disregard for what you're being attentive to. Wake up, be conscious, more conscious than you've been before. Not of how awful human will is, but whether you're choosing to give your attention to the awfulness of human will, or whether you're choosing to give your attention to the threshold of your capacity to see with the Holy Spirit and be the transformation of what you had called the awfulness of human will. You see? Continuing, this step is unequivocal in that it teaches there must be no exceptions. Although it does not deny that the temptation to make exceptions will occur. Of course they will. It's old crab barrel theory. You crawl out of the crab barrel, or try to, and the other crabs will grab you and pull you back in. And if you manage to get out, they'll whine and they'll plead and they'll cajole and they'll try to convince you that it's dangerous out there. You'd better come back of your own free will, even though they can't reach you anymore. Continuing, here then, your consistency is called on despite chaos. Just as when you've given your attention poorly and you've become fascinated with the awfulness of human will, and you have begun to obsess on it, and you finally find yourself in excruciating pain, what? You find that your consistency is called on despite the excruciating pain, despite the distress. And now, because you're hurting so much, you're willing to say, oh, okay, I got the message. As difficult as it is under these circumstances, I will give my consistency. Why? Because at that point, you know it serves you well. Even though, in order for it to serve you well, you're having to give up any authority you thought you had on your own. Again, here then, your consistency is called on despite chaos. Yet, chaos and consistency cannot coexist for long, since they are mutually exclusive. As long as you must be vigilant against anything, however, you are not recognizing this mutual exclusiveness and are holding the belief that you can choose either one. By teaching what to choose, the Holy Spirit will ultimately be able to teach you that you need not choose at all. This will finally liberate your will from choice and direct it towards creation within the kingdom. In other words, from a different place than your independent, self-authorizing mentality. But don't think that you can skip over the step of choosing one or the other and suddenly jump into the choiceless place. Because you have to learn the difference. You have to learn the difference. You actually have to learn the difference between love and a call for love without judgment. Again, as long as you must be vigilant against anything, you are not recognizing this mutual exclusiveness and are holding the belief that you can choose either one. But you must begin the practice of distinguishing between the two and choosing one over the other. Else you will not come to a point of recognizing what in your mind has expressed insanity and what in your mind expresses sanity. And until you can distinguish the difference, you can't make the choice for one or the other. And as you begin to make the choice for one or the other, and are choosing for sanity, sanity increases. And as sanity increases, it becomes more and more obvious to you that the other choice is not a choice at all. That in actuality, it's a fantasy choice. And in that recognition, you abandon the idea that there is a choice at all. But I'll tell you something. You try to move into a place of making no choices before you've distinguished the difference between your sanity and your insane thoughts, and the dream will continue. So you cannot avoid that part of the process, if you will. The Holy Spirit is here to show you what isn't working for you. Why? So that you can see it. Because once you see it, you will abandon it. Because none of you does anything that you see is useless. Continuing, choosing through the Holy Spirit will lead you to the kingdom. You create by what you are, in other words, by being instead of thinking, by being instead of talking. You create by what you are, but this is what you must learn. The way to learn it is inherent in the third step. That being, be vigilant only for God and His kingdom. The way to learn it is inherent in the third step, which brings together the lessons implied in the others and goes beyond them towards real integration. If you allow yourselves to have in your own mind, to have in your minds only what God put there, you are acknowledging your mind as God created it. Therefore, you are accepting it as it is. Well, I'll tell you something. Your mind as God created it is a far cry from your mind as you're using it. Because you're using your mind as a tool for defense against a conflicted world that appears to be conflicted because you are using your mind erroneously and causing the kingdom of heaven to register with you in a distorted way. Again, if you allow yourselves to have in your minds only what God put there, you are acknowledging your mind as God created it. Well, how does that happen? It happens by you shutting up all of your thinking and in the silence paying attention to what's left in your mind. Well, you know, a lot of you do that. It's called meditation. And then you find that in that space, you find no authority for actions. Well, that's pretty useless, you say. Well, you know what? Maybe you're not here to act in the way that you thought you were. Maybe you're here to pay attention. Maybe you're here to be the conscious awareness of what God is being and not be a self-started provocateur of interesting life experiences. Again, if you allow yourselves to have in your minds only what God put there, you are acknowledging your mind as God created it. Therefore, you are accepting it as it is. Since it is whole, you are teaching peace because you believe in it. The final step will still be taken for you by God, but by the third step, the Holy Spirit has prepared you for God. He is getting you ready for the translation of having into being. By the very nature of the steps you must take with Him. You learn first that having rests on giving. Here we're going to go through the three steps. You learn first that having rests on giving and not on getting. Next, you learn that you learn what you teach and that you want to learn peace. This is the condition for identifying with the kingdom, since it is the condition of the kingdom. You have believed that you are without the kingdom and have therefore excluded yourself from it in your belief. In other words, in your imagination and by the creation of definitions of yourself that bear no relation to reality. Continuing, it is therefore essential to teach you that you must be included and that the belief that you are not is the only thing that you must exclude. The third step, the one we've been discussing today, is thus one of protection for your minds, allowing you to identify only with the center where God placed the altar to Himself. The center of what? The center of your brother's mind so you can direct it well? No. The very center of you. We have already said that altars are beliefs, but God and His creations are beyond belief because they are beyond question. The voice for God speaks only for belief beyond question, which is the preparation for being without question. As long as belief in God and His kingdom is assailed by any doubts in your minds, His, God's perfect accomplishment, is not apparent to you. This is why you must be vigilant on God's behalf. The ego speaks against His creation and therefore does engender doubt. You cannot go beyond belief until you believe fully. Until you believe what? Until you believe the truth. And until you abandon your belief in what you made up. And that's what you need to learn to make the distinction between what God made and what you made up. Oh, I know, it sounds like that means that working with the Holy Spirit means going on an internal witch hunt, uncovering all your flaws. No. You know what? It's letting the Holy Spirit walk with you through your mind so that the jewels of your being might be pointed out where they had escaped your attention because they are crusted over with your lovelessness, your loveless self-definitions, your loveless definitions of creation. And so it picks up this dirty rock and you think, oh God, he's going to tell me that this is me. Nothing but a dirty clod. And the Holy Spirit holds it up and says, hey, take your hand here and rub it. And so you take it, this awfulness of yours, and you rub it. Because you've been willing to bring your attention to where the Holy Spirit told you to give it. Yeah. At this awfulness in you. And told you to rub it, and you rub it, and this stuff flakes off. My goodness, there's sparkle. My goodness, there's depth, there's color, there's illumination. Wow, I'm beautiful. Wow, I'm not what it looked like I was. Be willing to go for walks with the Holy Spirit right through the middle of you. So that what isn't true about you can be looked at and you have the opportunity to find that all it was a discoloration, a covering over of something that is true about you and has forever been true about you. It becomes a joy to do this, truly. But you know what? You won't find out until you do it. And I need to be clear with you about that. Likewise, it will become perfectly clear to you when you do it. Now, do you really have something better to do? I mean, hey, you know, leave here, go out, investigate the awfulness of human will a little bit more, be offended by it, tie yourself up in a knot because of it, find a way to retaliate, and then find a way to deal with the retaliation you get for the retaliation you gave. And then deal with how much darker everything got. Sure, go ahead. You know what? You can do it. You have been doing it. And you still exist, don't you? You still exist because, in spite of all of this, you can't stop being the direct expression of God that you are. You still can't stop being the Christ, although you are very good at ignoring it. So you can go on and do it longer. I'm telling you that you have an alternative. And I'm saying anytime you want to take the alternative, you can. And what the heck? Why not? Do it now. I'm not going to tell you to get a rod and put it up your backbone. And I'm not going to get a cattle prod and walk around behind you. I'm telling you, you have another choice. And I'm encouraging you to explore it. I am encouraging you to implement it. I'm encouraging you to bring commitment to it. I am encouraging you to learn how to become single-minded. I'm encouraging you to employ some self-discipline so that you observe where you're giving your attention and whether you're giving it alone. Why? So that you can choose to give it in tandem with the Holy Spirit. Why? So that you can learn to distinguish between what God made and what you made up out of what God made, or what you made up about what God made. Why? So that you can discern between your sanity and your insanity so clearly that the insanity registers with you as exactly what it is, so that you no longer find it attractive and can lose the obsession with constantly refreshing it and make a wholehearted, singular choice for your sanity. And you know what? I'm going to do it until all of my sleeping brothers are awake. I love you. And I hope this next week is a better one for you than the last two were.